we present the news quiz with your host, Sandy Toksby.
Welcome to the news quiz. We start with a TV listing from the Sky Travel Channel, read by Neil Sleet.
Floyd on Italy. Today, Floyd goes fishing for squid, cooks wild boar, and learns how to make cheese from a farmer's wife.
And our thanks to Jeff Ingram for sending that in. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Andrew Maxwell and Miles Jupp. And opposite them on my left, Katie Brand and Jeremy Hardy. Katie, listen to this.
She's watching the detectives. Ooh, he's so cute. She's watching the detectives. When they shoot, 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 shoot.
Katie, why, if you want to know the time, should you ask a member of Greenpeace?
So this is about undercover policemen.
Yes.
The dominant story about this has been about the Lawrence family, hasn't it? About how they have discovered in the past week that at the time of their son's murder, there was part of the police force who were undercover and trying to, in their words, get dirt on people who were either supporting the family or even members of the family, so that they could then sell that to the press. No, that I've made that up.
But you know what? There's not a single person in the room didn't think, oh, that could happen.
Yeah.
I could say that.
Possibly they were attempting to get it in the papers so that they could smear people, but there seems to have been a smear campaign against the Lawrence family by members of an undercover police force, and that has then been extrapolated out to lots of different groups and found that there are undercover police forces in pretty much everywhere.
But statistically speaking, Katie, that means this panel has probably been infiltrated.
Yeah.
Miles.
It's always the one you least expect.
Yeah. Is it?
My anarchist friends in Leeds, sort of looking back, people laughed. It's never ridiculous. Imagine that there is such a thing called anarchists or even a place called Leeds. But my anarchist friends in Leeds said that with hindsight, you could tell the coppers because they all looked like Wolfie Smith. They all looked a bit too radical, and you went round their house and there were too many posters and they never said anything that wasn't in any way related to struggle.
Apparently, as far as I can tell from reading all the reports about this, it's the man who is sleeping with the most women in the group. Is that
I knew that Peter right? Stringfellow wasn't really a Trotskyist.
I do love the tabloids' attitude to all this, because if you look at it, we've got an immoral police force, we've got corporations who don't pay their tax, we've got the government spying on our emails and phone calls, but never mind, because Andy Murray might win a game of tennis.
That's it, up on Murray Mount. There they are, all on Murray Mount.
Does it just sound like a Presbyterian sexual position?
That's it. It's okay, Margaret. Lie down there while I perform the Murray Mount.
Maybe Andy Murray, like you say, he is the undercover policeman of Wimbledon.
That's why he's so dour.
He's got big feet. I reckon he's a copper. I reckon Prince Andrew is definitely the undercover cop in the royal family. Doesn't he look like a copper? He looks nothing like the rest of them. He looks like a copper. He's thick set. You know that he wears a sheepskin jacket when he's on his own.
They're having big cuts, though, the police force, because in the new spending review. They're having a cut of something like 260 million or something, which basically the one way to do that would be to get rid of 9,000 policemen. Or the guy said, unless we can find, you know, another way to save money. And so presumably one way of doing that would be to have fewer undercover operatives staking out vegetarian cafes and things like that. And then
well, what are they monitoring? They're monitoring domestic extremists, which I like. It sounds like me with a feather duster. I think it's a...
But they could do all sorts of ways to save. I mean, for instance, riot gear. They could just sort of man up a little.
What,
it probably sounds easy for me to say that, but it's just, you know, watching my television, I reckon that's the sort of budgetary measure they could... They don't have to have uniforms. The uniform must... I mean, do you remember school uniforms? Such an expensive thing. I mean...
Yes,
you know,
but they have uniforms, otherwise it turns into a fashion parade at the station. So it equals them all out, you see.
That's true. I mean, if they all had helmets on, you'd sort of, I think as a nation we're trustworthy enough. If someone's wearing a police helmet, whatever they're wearing underneath, it could be something sensible. It could be an apron and cowboy boots. But if they're wearing a policeman's helmet, I think you'd take it as granted, even if it's 9 o'clock and they're in Newcastle City Centre and singing lewd songs. You know, you'd take it as read that that's a police person.
It must be very hard these days just being undercover. Back in the day, you used to be able to hide behind a newspaper.
Yeah.
Now it's not the same lowering your Kindle.
If you cut two eye holes out of your iPad, it ruins it.
There has been uproar following the revelations that undercover police have been infiltrating political groups, including those set up to expose police corruption. One member of the police was regularly involved in campaigns with environmentalists, all the while watching every step they take, every move they make. It was a sting operation. Met Police Commissioner Bernard Hogan Howe said he was shocked to discover he was Commissioner for Police, as he as he'd spent the last 20 years trying to save the whale. Andrew, who insists we're all in this together for the third year running?
Santa Claus.
2 points.
Thank you. No, the opposite of Santa Claus. The Grim Reaper of the budget. The Chancellor of the Exchequer.
Yes.
It's the latest spending review, they're going to spend money on. And they've decided to, show those pensioners a thing or two. They've been getting away with it too long. I fought the Nazis, take.
Did you see that Jeremy Paxman, when he was talking about it, he said that Osborne showed confidence. Did he sound confident, did you think?
No, I think under that hubris is a certain self-hatred. He said that the richest need to carry the greatest burden, and they do, because wealth is a burden. You know, you could see that in his eyes when he was delivering the speech. You know, he's distracted. He's thinking, how are my shares doing? Has the gamekeeper remembered to set the man traps?
The other thing, it's not just pensioners, is it? He's got this new idea about how immigrants have to demonstrate that they want to learn English in order to get their benefits. And if they don't demonstrate it, then they will have their benefits cut. But he seems to have conveniently forgotten that he actually cut funding for English for Speakers of Other Languages classes in 2011. But luckily for him, none of the people he's targeting can speak English, so they won't be able to complain.
There was a very good tweet from Tory MP Andrew Sellis, and he tweeted about the basic grasp of English, and he was agreeing with it, and he wrote, "Strongly support the loss of benefits unless claimants lean English."
Are you sure that's a mistake? He might have just meant that.
Well, he may work for The Guardian, what do I know? But that whole speaking English is overrated. I mean, I don't speak it very well, and I've fully integrated, I think.
I don't see what the problem is. You just think in English and then start speaking. They love it. That's exactly how English people see the world. We are quite right.
But the idea is, just because you're unemployed and have no money, you can't just turn up at the job centre and immediately just get given $100,000 and a free house and a car and a heliport, which is what normally happens, obviously. What happens is you have to wait. And so you turn up at the job centre and you say, I have absolutely no money and I haven't got a job. And they say, yeah, well, we'll go out and look for a job. And you say, yeah, but come on, there aren't any. They say, yeah, but go and look more. Yeah, you haven't looked in that bin over there, have you? And they won't give you any money. Now, this is good. This is the government sharing out the debt. Because if you think about it, the rich have huge debts, whereas the poor have got relatively small debts. But if you start off having to borrow enough money until you get your dole, and in the end, you've got really quite a large debt, you see, and in the end, you get to consolidate all your debts into one easily endurable monthly beating. So it's good that the poor are going to be in as much debt as the rich, I think.
But some of the cuts are extraordinary. In our local area, the library has been merged with the hospital. And you can't get a kidney transplant now, but you can borrow one for 3 weeks. Which is...
Ed Balls is flipping useless, though. Standing and blustering and basically saying, we'll accept these cuts. Why? And because there's this unchallenged narrative. And all the BBC News people, all the commentators, they say, there is this deficit, it is a reality, it has to be dealt with. We don't have to pay it back, that money. We can just say, you know what? We lost it. It's gone. You know, I know you lent me your garden shears. I don't know where they are. Money is imaginary anyway. Money is all made up. Most money is electronic. The quantitative easing isn't the sort of laxity they make it sound. It's just inventing money.
I think my theory is our main problem is we've got multi-millionaires in the cabinet
who
have never been in debt. So they don't know that it's actually fine.
But they're also...
Whereas if they put me in charge that's been living with debt personally since I was 18, I'd just be like, as long as you make the minimum payments, it's fine.
This week, George Osborne proposed a further £11 billion worth of cuts to public services and government departments in a bid to reduce the national deficit with his spending review for 20... Oh, I love a review, don't you? The costumes, the feathered hairdressers. Osborne unveiled his spending review live from his underground bunker beneath a volcano. Sadly, his cat was unable to attend as it had been privatised. For Labour, Ed Balls accused the Chancellor of being out of touch. Ed Miliband was on a Dungeons and Dragons away day. 2 points to Andrew Miles. Which whistleblower's whistle-stop tour has been grounded?
Oh, this has been very exciting.
It has.
Snowden, is that his name?
Yes.
He went to Hong Kong and the Americans said, whatever you do, don't let him leave. And they said, pardon? And let go of him. And he ran off and he went to Moscow. And then they thought, right, he's going to go to Cuba. And he booked a flight to Cuba. And then he wasn't on the seat. There was an empty seat because I don't know if he was sort of gave them the slip or he was, you know, got distracted in the sunglass hut or something like that in the terminal. Anyway, he didn't make the flight. And everyone said, where is he? And he's been hiding out in a very exciting... Well, what he's done, which I'm quite grateful to him for, he's sort of got the Cold War going again. Because we had the Cold War and everyone said, we've got to get rid of the Cold War. The Cold War isn't much fun. So they stopped the Cold War. And then we've had the War on Terror, which has been terrifying, actually. And I think people are thinking, actually, no, maybe we should go back to the Cold War. Because that was sort of better. That was sort of old men taking off their glasses and rubbing their eyes. And I think that's pleasant, artistically speaking.
I didn't fully understand all of it. According to Snowden, GCHQ runs an operation called Tempura, which stores all of the UK's internet traffic for 30 days in, I don't know, in a light and crispy batter. I don't know how...
Everything. Absolutely everything is stored.
Yeah.
The lot. I met an internet security expert, and I asked him, well, what can you do to make your computer more safe? And he went, have you got any blue tack in your house? Because every time you log onto your computer, turn it on and go online, you take the blue tack and you stick it over the camera that's built into your laptop.
No.
Yeah. And hackers can just open up your machine, turn it on, record all your keystrokes, and then take screen grab pictures of you. So all over the world, there's somewhere stored, there's lots of pictures of our love faces. Gallery.
According to Haig, all of those have to be personally authorised by me. And he's like,
no. But also, do you know what? Half of that must just be passwords we've all had to store. I mean, honestly, I've tried. Have you not? And then suddenly they'll say, you have to change your password. You think, no, I can't remember one more. Yeah. I really can't. I'll go mad if I have to remember one more comma. Must have a capital letter and several combinations of physics equations. And...
Well, the good thing is... You know, if you watch Spooks, it's all home in on the thoughts of everybody in Milton Keynes and then enlarge them to the size of a bus. They can't do any of that. They only catch somebody when they raid someone's house because the neighbours dobbed them in for benefit fraud and they search their shed and find a surface-to-air missile. That's the only one anyone ever gets caught.
I'm always amazed that they're worried about the legal aspects of this. I mean, GCHQ are sort of leaping in to say, oh, we're not breaking any laws. But, I mean... I sort of think it's all right for spies to break the law. I mean, I just assume that's what they were already doing. I mean, you watch Spooks or James Bond or whatever, you never think, well, the main thing is he's sticking to the highway code, etc.
He is licensed to kill, so it's sort of like having a driving licence, I imagine, or a dog licence, and he would be well aware of all the terms and conditions of his licence to kill, and it has to be renewed, and they do a theory test, of course.
Yeah. The spy driving test, don't they? They do the spy driving test, where you drive down a very narrow, cobbled Mediterranean street and knock over some vegetables and fruit. The vendor shakes his fist in a way that only fruit vendors at passing spies ever do to express anger.
Assange, living in an embassy must be really great, I imagine.
Why?
Working in an embassy?
No, not working one. Working anywhere is very tedious. But just living in an embassy, presumably being brought three hot meals a day.
No, I think it is interesting. I think you'd tire of the Ferrero Rocher after a while. I think
I think endless ambassadorial sort of functions and stuff. One day they're going to knock on the door and go, great news, Julian, we've sorted you out a flight to Ecuador. And he's going, oh, I'm just having another dinner suit measured. I can't go to Ecuador.
US whistleblower Edward Snowden, currently living in a Moscow airport, may remain there for several months while he awaits the outcome of his application for asylum in Ecuador. He's currently based in Sheremetyevo's transit hall in Moscow airport, a fact only discovered when he became the only person to leave feedback about the waiting room's sleep quality and breakfast limitations on TripAdvisor. 2 points to Miles. Jeremy, why does every little help unless you're a doctor?
The BMA have taken umbrage at a comment by, is it Sir Bruce Keogh, who's chair of NHS England or something, because he said the NHS should be more like Tesco's, because Tesco's is available all the time, 24/7, 8 days a week. And you think, well, operations are open. Hospitals are rammed in the middle of the night. If you go to an all-night Tesco's at 4 a.m, there'll be one desultory weirdo shoplifting. If you go to St Thomas's at 4 a.m, it's absolutely heaving. It's like an embassy during a movie about Vietnam or something. It's rammed, full of people who've got their head stuck in a wheelie bin or slipped on their own sick or done something unspeakable with a vacuum cleaner. It's absolutely heaving. You know, the NHS deals with stuff like that 24 hours a day. Tesco's don't. If you go into a hospital in the middle of the night, you will find somebody with an unexpected item in their bagging area, I'm telling you.
I quite like the idea, though, of a hospital sort of being laid out more like a supermarket, you know, like when they put all the sort of frivolous things next to the checkout. So you might go in to sort of have your appendix out, but on your way out, you might pick up a boob job or something.
I think it would be quite nice if hospitals smelled of fresh baked bread.
That's nice.
I'd quite like it if all supermarkets smelt like trauma wards. It's horses for courses, isn't it? Really is.
At the British Medical Association's annual conference this week, doctors voted against government plans for more NHS services to be available at the weekends and in the evenings. Leading doctors claimed Health Secretary Jeremy Hunt was trying to turn the NHS into Tesco's. Not good, is it? An Ocado NHS? That'd be very nice. Shockingly, the BMA also passed a vote of no confidence in the Health Secretary. This is only the 485th time they have done so. The consultant who called for the no confidence motion in Jeremy Hunt said he spent his time alarming patients, demoralising staff and denigrating the service, which, as everyone knows, is the receptionist's job. 2 points to Jeremy at the end of round one. The scores are Andrew and Miles have got 4 points, but so too have Katie and Jeremy. We start round two with a cutting from the Harborough District Council website.
Come to our Love Your Market event with live appearance by Peppa Pig, followed by Hog Roast.
Our thanks to Tom Day for sending us that. Andrew, who's been convicted of a bunga bungle?
This story would be about none other than Silvio Berlusconi.
Yeah.
He's a huge, huge hero to me. He has his own private artificial volcano. How many other sex offenders have that?
Am I the only one with a slight crush on Silvio Berlusconi?
Yeah.
That would just be to pay for it most of the time. Yeah.
But the girl involved, the girl who he's been found guilty of having sex with, Ruby the Heart Stealer, she has repeatedly denied that she had sex with him. You think, what? How could she? Maybe it was dark. She couldn't smell the mothballs. I don't know what happened. But,
yeah. It's horrible. Just a sound in the darkness. You wonder, Silvio, where are you? And all you can hear is just the sound of a Werther's original being sucked. Over here, my darling. I know he's Mexican. Over here. Follow the sound of a Vicks jar being opened.
I can't believe that.
She wouldn't be a prostitute. She'd have to be a faith healer.
When there's a wet patch to start with, it's a bit demoralising, isn't it?
I'm glad you feel able to share, Jeremy.
I'm definitely rethinking my crush now.
When it comes to Italian politics, there's only one rule. Vote clown.
Yeah, he did very well, didn't he?
Beppe Grillo, right, is a fantastic Italian comedian. He ends up getting a third of all the seats. He just went from town to town, piazza to piazza, basically performing live to giant crowds of people who
would
never...
Did the whole crowd come out of one little car?
That's Italian families for you.
I've just got this horrifying image now for this country that Mrs. Brown is going to basically be the next Prime Minister. Because that's broadly what it is, isn't it? Doesn't Mrs. Brown go around doing these incredible massive tours all around Britain?
What, Gordon's wife?
No.
The former Italian Prime Minister, media mogul and now confirmed lech, Silvio Berlusconi, has been sentenced to 7 years in prison after being convicted of having sex with an underage prostitute and of abusing his office. Interesting euphemism. 76-year-old Berlusconi is currently dating a 27-year-old, although friends don't think it will last as the age gap is too small. Bizarrely, he's still hugely popular and tipped to be the next Prime Minister, so Ed Miliband, you know what you've got to do. 2 points to Andrew Miles. Have a listen to this. Miles, who stood up to patriarchy this week?
Well, this is a quite remarkable person, actually. This is in Texas.
Yeah.
There's an extraordinary thing, which is that she did a filibuster. Mm. They were going to pass a law. They were going to close down most of the abortion clinics in Austin, and she...
The whole of Texas.
The whole of Texas. And she stood there in trading shoes for tenor, because you're not allowed to... the rules are you're not allowed to go off topic. You have to stand up, not like our sort of politicians who stand up and say something and then sit down again. You have to stand up for the whole time. You're not allowed to lean on anything. You're not allowed loo breaks. And she did this remarkable thing of speaking for over 10 hours.
Yeah, it was almost 11 hours. Like a recording of the Now Show.
Which is, I mean...
entertaining version of Just a Minute.
No, it's extraordinary, the Texas Senate, actually. It's absolutely true. A few years ago, they had a vote in the Texas Senate as to whether or not they should introduce foreign language classes into high schools in Texas. And a Texas senator stood up and he said, "I don't believe that this is necessary. If English was good enough for Jesus, it's good enough for me." Wendy Davis, a Texas state senator, spoke for almost 11 hours without interruption to filibuster anti-abortion proposals introduced by Republicans. Davis was raised by a single mother and by 19 was a single mother herself, raising her daughters in a trailer park before putting herself through college and going to Harvard Law School. Can I say this is not a setup for a joke? It's just going to win Julia Roberts an Oscar. That's all it's about. So 2 points to Miles. Katie, who is taking baby steps towards treating the blues?
This is a study that's been out, been published this week, where there's a particular hormone or chemical in your body called oxytocin, which is released at stressful points. They found it when women give birth, it's released into their system and it helps them bond with the baby. And also it is apparently released when people cuddle or hug, and it just gives you a sense that the world is a nicer place and that people are your friends and you should generally trust people. So the experiment was, they gave some people oxytocin and some people a placebo. Then they gave them a disappointing encounter with a stranger where they were rejected. And then they recorded how bad the person felt afterwards. But the recommendation is this could be a good way to deal with conflict resolution, and you're more likely to seek help if you've got lots of oxytocin. And also, interestingly, apparently, in long-term relationships, a man who has his oxytocin spiked by lots of hugs from his wife is less likely to cheat on her.
Oh, right.
Yes, so you don't even have to have sex, ladies. You just have to give them a cuddle.
I think that experiment sounds amazing, sort of getting 200 people and sort of being a bit narky with them. If your job is a scientific researcher and you go in for work, and what are we doing today? Oh, another experiment. Oh, great. So what's we going to do? More pipettes and Petri dishes. Oh, great. No, could you annoy 200 people? God, I'd absolutely love to, yeah.
The guy doing this work, a researcher called Christopher Cardoso, said the news would be cause for a certain degree of excitement for those who suffer from mood disorders. And I have to say, I'm not sure he understands depression all that well. Yay!
Don't they know that they're part of the experiment? I mean, don't they just know that they're being wound up? Because you can't just go randomly annoying people in the street
well,
and then...
Darren Brown does.
...doing blood... I mean, surely you can't just run up to people in the street, wind them up and then test their blood without them noticing.
Yeah, but you could get their permission as part of the annoying. Is it all right if I annoy you for a bit? Well, OK, yeah, how annoying can I be? Yeah? Yeah, how annoying? How annoying? Is this annoying yet? Am I annoying you yet? Am I annoying you yet? Tell me when I'm annoying you. I'm annoying you and I'm just kind of annoying you. You know, it's part of the thing. It's built in.
Maybe that didn't wind me up at all, because I just thought that was playful and skittish on your part. Yeah, but after a while, you get... It's like lab rats. I'm sure they get wise to this stuff, and they start thinking, you know what? Bollocks to your test results. I'm just going to act weirdly. And then all the drugs that NICE ratify for use on humans will be completely ineffectual, because they're all based on me acting a bit weirdly when given half a paracetamol.
I wonder...
Why do we need science anyway? Why can't we just go, cuddles are nice?
Yeah.
It's just nice to press yourself against somebody.
Sounds like someone who's just had a sort of DNA test conducted by the police and is trying to talk their way out. Well, that's just science, isn't it? It was only cuddling.
These days, with all this political correctness, one doesn't know where one is with the ladies. I mean, in the old days, you could put on a balaclava and drop your trousers in the park, and it was seen as a playful introduction to ladies. These days, you can't do anything.
Oh. Yeah, it
is. Moving along from this afternoon play we've moved into... People suffering from depression should be given oxytocin, the so-called cuddle hormone, to encourage them to reach out for support, according to a study at Concordia University in Montreal. 100 students took part in a double-blind experiment, double blindness being an unfortunate side effect of oxytocin. It's thought oxytocin could help conditions characterised by a difficulty in connecting with others and reading emotions, so-called Michael Gove syndrome. Students in the experiment were subjected to an unexpected insult or rejection. Those who had taken oxytocin reached out for support, while those who hadn't reached for chocolate digestives. 2 points to Katie. Jeremy, where are doctors saying stop taking the tablets, laptops and mobiles?
Apparently, using IT damages your right brain development, because you've got two brains. People think you've got one brain, but you haven't. You've got a right brain and left brain. One is for maths and the other's for geography. people who spend too long on computers and things like that, they just want everything instant and fast, and it's all iPods and it's all everything, and they can't concentrate. They can't sit and listen to a record. They can't read a newspaper. It's all that someone has to tweet them a link to something, and then they read it really quickly and forget about it and move on to the next thing.
Also, but you can have three or four things going at once, can't you?
Yeah. People are watching TV while reading a book
but it's also microwaving a locust. People are not in the habit of having to remember things. And I can't remember... I used to remember phone numbers. I can't remember them at all. I mean, to be fair, that's what my butler's for. I don't know what...
But it's a bit disingenuous, this test for digital dementia, I think it's called, because you can't...
Digital dementia?
Yes, you can't just test...
Sounds like you forgot where you put your finger.
Again, I think that was Silvio Berlusconi's defence.
I know exactly where the finger went. Back into my Werther's original bag. Can you find me? I'm on the bed.
It's a bit disingenuous to use the test of can you remember your mobile phone number, because no one needs to remember their mobile phone number because your mobile phone remembers it for you.
Yeah, but what if you lose your phone?
Yeah.
You need to go to a call box. You know,
a what?
Let's say... I remember when the phone was put on in our house. You see, phones were marvellous in those days. They were attached to your house. You didn't have to take them anywhere. Now, people, you know, were just getting used to phones then. You'd answer the phone and say, England, 4.
And they were in the hall, weren't they? They were always in the hall.
Yes,
nobody actually had
on the telephone table.
Yes.
And there would be a notepad, yes. No, yeah. I'll take a message for him. He doesn't live here and I've never heard of him. No, it's the only phone in the county, but if I run into him, I shall be sure to give him your message.
Doctors in South Korea are concerned about the rise of digital dementia amongst people who overuse computers and smartphones. Heavy users overdevelop the left-hand side of the brain, leaving the right-hand side underdeveloped, which makes hat buying enormously tricky. At the end of round two, the scores are Andrew and Miles have got 8 points, but so too have Katie and Jeremy. Before we start round three, here is a cutting from the June newsletter of the Heptonstall Methodist Church.
This evening at 7 p.m, there will be a hymn recital in the park. Bring a blanket and come prepared to sin.
Thanks to Chris Cavey for sending us that. Andrew, have a listen to this.
Row, row, row your boat gently to the shore. If you see a lion, don't forget to roar. Roar! Roar!
Andrew, whose hopes of staying in this country are sinking fast?
Oh, this is the Australian who sabotaged a boat race. Oh, Trenton Oldfield. A man who has two surnames for first names. Wanted a strike a blow against elitism. I think they're going to boot him out.
Yeah.
Oh, great, isn't it? I mean, Australians are the last people you can throw out of the country without any guilt. You can boot them out. They're white, so it's not racist. You know, and it's not like they're going back to Australia to be tortured or anything. Oh, we should boot them all out. Every couple of years, we should take all the Aussies over here, kick them out and get some fresh ones.
And they said his presence in the country is not conducive to the public good. Hand on heart, how many of us can say that our presence in the country is conducive to the public good?
Do you not think Theresa May must be kicking herself if she just pushed Abacatada in during the boat race? Yes.
I just wish that instead of some other toff, I wish it had just been a couple of geezers who just come out of a pub, fat geezer called Jason and his cousin Dave, and they come out and they're absolutely ruined, and a boat race is going by and they're like, oi, oi, let's have it! And they just taken off their white Reebok Classic and jumped in. No reason, no message, I'm smashing the elitist system. None of that stuff, just, oi, oi, let's have it!
Trenton Oldfield, who was convicted of causing a public nuisance after swimming in front of the 2012 boat race to protest against elitism, is facing deportation back to his native Australia. After 10 years of living in the UK, Oldfield says he can't return to Australia as he fears all the sunshine will make him too cheerful to carry on protesting. 2 points to Andrew. Miles, how can we all chip away at cravings?
Very exciting science news this week, which is that chips and things are essentially addictive. They affect those bits of your brain that addictions do, which is why, for instance, you know, it's sort of white flour and those sort of things, which is why if you have a big bowl of pasta, immediately afterwards you want another really big bowl of pasta. Whereas if, for instance...
Do you like pasta, Miles?
I do quite like...
Would you...
I think you should explain Miles' predicament at the moment, then.
Tell them about the diet.
I've been doing a thing. It's not a diet.
No.
It's not a... Why would
Sorry.
I be dieting? It's...
Why would you need to diet?
Cruel. Extraordinary way to behave. I've been doing a thing this week called Live Below the Line, which is a thing to do with the Global Poverty Project, and 1.4 billion people in the world live below the poverty line and eat for less than a pound a day, so... A number of people are eating for less than a pound a day, including me, and really is rather difficult. I do feel reasonably faint.
Do you?
And I don't know what to do. I can't spend any money on anything now that I've spent my £5 on food. So, for instance, I went for a meeting earlier, and I was early, so I had half an hour, and I just had to sit on a bench. This is day 4. So actually, tomorrow is the last day, my wedding anniversary, which I will spend eating couscous, which is not as filling as it should be.
Have you thought about shoplifting? Because that's what the poor do. They don't actually live on a dollar a day. There is such a thing as crime.
Tomorrow, then, I may go on some sort of anniversary spree.
Rob something like nice, man. Get yourself a balaclava. Enjoy yourself.
Why don't you go and have a nice lunch at Claridge's and then, when the bill arrives, explain the £1 a day thing?
I think I'll have been arrested by them for wearing a balaclava but politely asking for directions in the shop.
I think it's very good, Miles. Is pasta included in that?
Pasta is. I bought one bag of pasta this week. Because I was doing this, I thought I need some energy. So I should have had a couscous meal and a pasta meal today, but I've had two pasta meals. I've gone crazy, basically.
I think it's brilliant children, but this the research that they did, they didn't actually give the test subjects bread or potatoes. They gave them milkshakes.
Milkshakes? Yes. With the high carb milkshakes.
Yeah, so if you promise a fat bloke chips and you give him a milkshake, it's no wonder he craves chips, is what I think. Even slightly suspect.
They're basically saying eat sensibly. If you eat pasta, you want more pasta. If you eat a bowl of bran flakes and spinach, you know, you'll think differently about life.
According to research at Boston Children's Hospital in the United States, processed carbohydrates that are high on the glycemic index, such as white bread and chips, trigger parts of the brain linked to addiction. Scientists recruited 12 obese men by leading a trail of Smarties to the hospital door. The experiment used scanners to monitor the men's brain activity. 4 hours after drinking a high GI milkshake, the brains of test subjects lit up in the shape of a donut. At 2 points to Miles. In fact, I'm going to give you an extra point for being such a nice boy.
Oh. That's very nice.
Katie, who is lying if they say size doesn't matter?
Apparently, if you have more space, you're more likely to be dishonest, apparently.
Is that right?
Yes.
It was big desks, wasn't
it? Well, if you generally... Big desks are part of it, apparently. If you have a big desk, then you're more likely to be dishonest at work. So I am hoping that the government will introduce a policy where all bankers have to have sort of centimetre-square desks that they have to just crouch behind. Possibly, maybe that's the problem in the square mile, that they've all got kind of five-foot-by-five-foot desks, so they can't remember what the truth is.
So having a big car makes you less honest?
The wider point is that if you have more room to spread out...
Yeah.
Then you're less likely to be honest. So if you have a bigger desk, you're less likely to be honest at work. If you have a bigger car seat to sit in while you drive, you're more likely to drive badly and then be dishonest about it. Apparently they did an experiment where someone who had a big driver's seat in their car was more likely to say that they felt they might be able to get away with a hit and run.
Wow.
If you wear shoes that are too big for you, you're more likely to be clumsy.
That's true.
I think, basically, there's got to be some truth in this. I mean, once in my life I have flown in other than economy, and I felt invincible. I genuinely felt, because I'm quite nervous of flying, that because I'm in this first-class seat, if the plane crashes, it's very unlikely that I will be involved in that.
Even though you're at the front?
Yeah. I thought, well, look, you know, they're not going to let us crash.
Why do you think the first class is always at the front? Because they get the posh to absorb the impact.
I'm not suggesting it's rational.
No, okay, it's never the poor people. No plane ever backs into a mountain.
Yeah. I know, it's not rational, but I'm just saying that there's got to be something in this experiment.
Isn't it just that everything is run by liars and idiots?
You say liars and idiots, but I think that's people skills.
Yeah. I like to think that I'm very honest. I drive the world's smallest car. Honest goodness, I put the seatbelt on, I look like I'm wearing a rucksack. Expensive physical settings, such as having a big desk or a large driver's seat in a car, can cause people to feel more powerful and dishonest, according to research at Columbia Business School in the United States. The research showed that all of this goes back to evolutionary psychology. If you give an infinite number of monkeys a desk and a typewriter, one of them will type the works of Shakespeare, but the one with the biggest desk will invade Poland. 2 points to Katie. Jeremy, why should you not mix heel with walkies?
Is it a dog-based story?
No, it's a heel-based story.
Heels. Oh, you can't walk in heels.
Yeah,
see,
2 points.
Ladies,
so that's the end of the show.
Men wear shoes that are usually quite comfortable or that you can kick a ball in or you can climb up a thing or you can drop a heavy thing on without breaking your toes. Women wear uncomfortable, undignified things that you can't do anything in because the historic role of footwear has been to stop women getting very far. Basically, women's shoes are the clothing equivalent of Kathy Bates with a breeze block and a sledgehammer. And in this country, women are especially bad. It's about confidence. If you look at shoes and you think, I will walk weirdly, and everyone will know that I've just been to a wedding because I'm bow-legged with a weird kind of child's mobile sticking out of my hair. Everyone, and you see women tottering. Now,
if I wear them, I get terrible lower back pain, mainly from falling on my arse.
It's like, do you remember the Exchange and Mart? Men used to be able to get these things. Lack confidence in the workplace, shorty? Get these things and they go inside your shoe to make you look taller. And I've worked with Burt Reynolds, who's a marvellous man, and he's got shoes. They're like Elton John's in The Musical of Tommy. Huge shoes. You think about 12 inches of that is boot, because he's got these enormous lifts, whereas women just totter around on these things. Look, you're not fooling anyone that you're really that height. Just get some plimsolls.
According to a survey, wearing high heels adds an hour to the monthly commute for women, presumably even longer for men. Researchers questioned 1,500 women who couldn't walk fast enough to get away. One in three women has tripped while walking upstairs in heels. Presumably the other two were walking downstairs. 55% of women surveyed said that they put up with the drawbacks of heels because wearing them made them feel more confident and smart, which is why I always host the news quiz in thigh-high stilettos. Full bondage gear. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Mr. Maxwell.
Up to 300 new jobs at Meat Factory. Huge boost after 300 were axed at Abattoir.
Mr. Chubb.
This has been sent in by Ray Crispin. This is from a What's On guide in the Greenwich area. Join curator Jessica Lewis for a tour of Cutty Sark. Originally designed to last just 30 years, she's nearly five times that age. Come and discover the secrets of her success and learn about the recent conservation project to preserve her for future generations.
Ms. Brand.
This was sent in by Stuart Jeffries. It's a segment of a review of a fan-assisted oven. There are 67 litres of space in the main oven and 35 litres in the smaller cavity, so there's plenty of room for a family.
Mr. Hardy.
This was sent in by Andy Powell, Sandra. And it's a comment from Bradley Wiggins on the BBC Sport website. I descended like a bit of a girl after the crash, he told Cycling Weekly. Not to disrespect girls, I have one at home. That's life, and we just have to push on and deal with the disappointments.
Let's take a look at the final score. Katie and Jeremy have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Andrew and Miles with 13. Before we leave you, here's a cutting from the Limerick Leader sent to us by Neil Robinson.
A West Limerick cemetery, which is due to be enlarged, has been described as a death trap. By a local county councillor.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the News Quiz Extra were Andrew Maxwell, Miles Jupp, Katie Brand and Jeremy Hardy. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Neil Sleet. The chair's script was written by Lucy Clark, Simon Littlefield and Rodri Crooks, with additional material by Jess Fostercue and James Bugg. The producer was Alexandra Smith.